The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Natasha Froese and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Heal. Welcome back, Katie.
Thank you, Natasha. And I have to say, after my week away, I do have one question, and it's for James, which is, James, how do you feel to be one of the few men in the lobby not subject to the honey trap?
Devastated, Katie. Devastated.
And nothing on your messages at all? Have you gone back over?
Several times, and Charlie or Abby have not messaged me, no.
Have you not?
No.
Okay, that's all I need to know.
Now, Angela Rayner has faced some fresh allegations towards her tax interests. Katie, what's happened with this story?
So this story has been rumbling on since Lord Ashcroft's biography of Angela Rayner, in which there were allegations about which residence was her primary residence when she sold her property, and the idea that she saved some money by selling one property in Stockport as her main residence, and the allegation is, was she actually living in a way that would make the other property, her husband at the time, now her ex-husband, was her main residence. Now, over the weekend, the Mail and Sunday have published photos with captions that they found through her accounts, which refer to her saying, you know, back home, about the property her then husband was in. And therefore, what they're trying to push is this idea that she has been deceitful or loose with the truth when it comes to which was her main residence at the time. Now, in terms of savings, I think if you can compare it to some Tory tax scandals, this is quite minimal in terms of the amount saved, so only a couple of thousand at most, but it's about the principle. And I think because Angela Rayner has always been so out there to have the fight with the Tories, if you think about the number of times she has called for Tory ministers to resign when there's been any doubt upon their affairs, that's probably what makes it quite tricky for her. It has felt at times like the story is dying down. I think the question is, does the Mail on Sunday disclosure suddenly mean that it gains more momentum? As of yet, a main broadcaster, for example, is yet to pick it up, and you don't see it on the BBC News website. Now, that is a frustration to many Tories because they think it is a legitimate public interest issue if there has been some, you know, leniency on the rules. So is there something that will take it from where it is now to a bigger story? And I think the question is, you speak to Conservatives and they say they are convinced this story has months more to run and you have a situation where Angela Rayner cannot be Deputy Prime Minister. We are not there yet. But you also have all these rumours about shadow cabinet members talking about what happens if Angela Rayner has to step aside as Deputy Prime Minister and someone needs to stand in. There are many willing candidates, you'll be shocked to know. And therefore, you know, I think it has some way still to go. Of course, it's worth pointing out that Angela Rayner is an elected figure in the Labour Party, the only one alongside Keir Starmer. So she is actually pretty tricky to remove. And therefore, say the allegations gathered enough momentum, because right now she's denied them. She said the tax advice means that she is in the clear, but she has not published it. But say it got to a point where the position was no longer tolerable by Keir Starmer standards, I think it's more likely than not she would still be deputy leader, an elected position. It's just you could be stripped of shadow cabinet roles. But that in itself is a risk because of all the members in the shadow cabinet Keir Starmer does not want to have issues with. It's the one he cannot sack completely, and that is Angela Rayner.
I think that the fact this has dragged on for 2 months, obviously it's a sign of the Tories finally having something to kind of push towards and attack the opposition in terms of personality, not just things like policy like the Green New Deal, etc. But also because it's a really difficult one for Labour politicians, I think, to answer, because they're very much conditional on do you trust Angela Rayner or not in terms of that tax advice she's received. So this morning we had Abina Apong Asare out there basically saying, look, you know, there's been lots of attacks on female politicians and that's unfair. David Lammy yesterday saying there's a different standard of government, standards for government as there are for opposition. Both of those aren't great lines because they can quite easily be picked up by opponents saying, hang on, this is quite patronising, you're expecting lower standards for different types of people.
Yeah, I think the fact that David Lammy went on Laura Koonsberg's show and by the end of it was saying she is a northern woman, so therefore lay off, does suggest they're running out of ways to defend Angela Rayner. Now, I actually think Angela Rayner is much better at defending herself than other members of the Shadow Cabinet are. I think there is enough grey area here that she can say, well, look, my accountant said X, you know, see if that holds up. I think, as some would say, there is at least an arguable truth to this. But where David Lammy went, and that was to move to identity politics and almost suggest, you know, well, she's being attacked for these reasons. And you can see some in Labour picking it up. But as things stand, we don't have different tax rules if you're in the North or you're a woman. So I think we have to be a bit careful on that point. And therefore, you know, one of the tricky things here is Angela Rayner is the figure in the Shadow Cabinet who is talking about higher standards and has been for some time in terms of how you hold politicians to account, potentially statutory, moving independent ethics advisor to a role whereby they would have more authority than they currently do. So it wouldn't just be your independent ethics advisor would go to the Prime Minister and say, I think the Cabinet Minister broke the rules, but it's your call. That it would almost be like, final what they said. So I think therefore it's more complicated. I actually wonder if one of the best things Angela Rayner could have done, almost like early on in this, to just have a big hour-long conference saying, come at me.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I'm ready for scrutiny because I've called for scrutiny all these times before. But instead, we've had a situation where it's been drawn out over many weeks, and she looks as though time she's been hiding behind it or wanting to avoid the questions. And it does mean, I think, that I would say the jury is out on how much more serious this gets, particularly because the Tories clearly think they have space to add to this. And yes, there's a police investigation, but the thing I think they really want is for HMRC to open an investigation, which as soon as they did that, if you think about Nadeem Zahawi, different amounts, but the principle would be as soon as HMRC open an investigation, it's probably untenable, even if you say different standards, opposition government, for that person to stay in position.
And even if nothing happens as a result of this, you've had Angela Rayner, one of the party's best communicators, as Katie says there, hamstrung for the past 2-3 months. It's notable how little she's been out on the airwaves at a time when I think both Tories and Labour would say she's one of the better communicators on the front bench. Just like we've seen with Gaza, this issue has hamstrung one of Labour's best communicators.
And James, tell us about Richard Tyson as the leader of Reform. He's been in the media a lot today. There's been attacks on Labour. There's been new policy plans. Tell us about it.
So today's been a big debate on the future of the NHS. We should almost have Kate Andrews here to talk about it. But basically today, Wes Streeting has done a piece for The Sun where he takes aim at the middle class lefties opposing Labour's plans to reform the NHS within the NHS, so the British Medical Association by implication. And it just happened to coincide with the same day that Richard Tyson was doing a big Westminster briefing on reforms plans for the NHS. So he was out on the Today programme and then doing this Q&A with journalists. And really his big idea is re-diverting the what he calls the $30 billion we spend on net zero drive for the next 25 years into funding the NHS to get those waiting lists down. So according to his party's calculations, that would cost $17 billion of the $30 billion. And then he would also use this money to kind of free up a lot of incentives to invest in private health, people take private health insurance out. I think this is the danger that really sums up where Reform's at, which is that, you know, on the one hand, they've got a leadership which is pretty Thatcherite. You've got Richard Tyson, former Tory Merrill aspirant for London, and he wants to expand an expansion of private health insurance. But on the other hand, Reform's target voter is actually pretty left-leaning on the economy. So you've got things where, you know, UKIP's voters 10 years ago worked this out. So places like Hayward and Middleton, they were able to poll about 38% of the vote because they were sort of right-wing on crime and law and order and migration, but were also quite left-wing on things like the NHS and spending more money. So the eternal dilemma, I think, for Reform is, yes, it's something that their Westminster base loves, you know, more private healthcare, etc., but are the voters actually going to resonate with that, or is it going to be seen as you want to privatise the NHS in focus groups?
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed this podcast, why not rate and review?